8:15, having arrived, I'm going to call the Education Finance Committee to order and welcome members. We have a little better weather now than we've had a few times early on. Representative Grunhagen, I'm going to turn the floor over to you first.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Yesterday, what we were discussing...
Members... Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Grunhagen.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yesterday when we were discussing special ed, I made a comment about the rules and laws over and above the federal requirement being burdensome. And in other words, what I meant is they don't really help the student that much. They just create more paperwork and requirements by the administration. In fact, I had a superintendent tell me, you know, we spend more time filling out paperwork than we do helping the students sometimes in special ed. And evidently that was interpreted by some people in the committee that I meant that special ed students were burdensome. And that had nothing to do with that. Now, that came back to me through the grapevine, so I just want to clarify that had nothing to do. I've got a nephew who's special ed, okay? And I've spent hours in special ed meetings trying to help people and students or parents, students, and administration come to conclusions for the best of the student. So I just, it came back through the grapevine that I somehow insinuated special ed students are a burden, and I just want to clarify publicly that had absolutely nothing to do with it. It has to do with the excessive laws and regulations Minnesota passed, which were well-intended, I'm sure, but I question whether or not they're really helping the student in a lot of cases. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much, Representative Grunhagen. Thank you. We are going to hear House File 47. Representative Mariani has worked very hard on this bill. And we'll wait for you to get to the desk there and ask you to move the bill. And there is one short bill later on from the chair. Very important, significant bill coming up.
Morning, Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Mariani, please proceed. Welcome.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, I will move that House File 247. Is the motion at this point just recommended to pass, just to get it before us?
To lay over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Yeah, I've never gotten that procedure down.
So. Okay, so the Mariani motion is to lay over for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. And also, Representative Mariani, we have... And members, if you take a look, there's an A18 amendment, and the date on it is at 2:08, and that is 8 minutes past 8 minutes past the 24-hour deadline. And so, my thoughts, member, here is, since this is going to be laid over, I don't think we need to make a motion and approve this, but all the numbers and all the fiscal notes and all those type of things apply to the amendment. So if it's all right with members, we'll have Representative Mariani talk about the bill as if A18 is included, but we will not officially vote on that amendment. Is Representative Woodard, is that? Okay, thank you very much. So we will, as you talk, assume A18 is added to this, but we will not officially add it this morning. So Representative Mariani, please proceed.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chair, and that's... That's correct and fair. For the sake of this committee, is really the purpose is to have transparency. People know what the author is thinking, and can then respond accordingly. Mr. Chair, excuse me, I got home pretty late, so I'm pretty tired this morning. And this morning, I discovered my granddaughter left me a nice little drawing. So that's me, that handsome guy over there. And then this is some kind of award that my granddaughter insists that I got. And I don't know that there's a story here, and so I'm going to have to look around for my award today. But anyway,
very nice. Thanks for sharing that.
My day. Members, I would encourage us to... we had a long conversation in the policy committee on HF 247. So I will be pretty brief. I know this committee heard a fantastic presentation from task force members Bob Erickson and Scott Thomas about a month ago or so, along with the Senate. I would encourage members to think about themselves as continuing to play a very important role, a very important historic role as Americans and as Minnesotans. And our role is one where we've been constantly challenged to create an equal society that applies to all people, and in this case, to all people from different races and cultures. As you all know, the Brown v. Board decision in 1954 eliminated the previous Supreme Court decision that erroneously insisted that equal and separate was consistent with our Constitution. And this, of course, that case applied to public education, but obviously had implications across all our public institutions. And since then, all of our country, including Minnesota, have been struggling with, now that we got rid of the legal formal blessing of separation of races in our public institutions, we've been struggling with ways to, in fact, make our schools and other public institutions places that have equal access and equal opportunity for all people. The state got involved as early in the 60s in helping and responding to lawsuits that have been brought against the city of Minneapolis for its segregated schools. Then it continued over time to extend its assistance to school districts out to cities of the first class, except for Rochester, because it was a city of the first class at that time. And over time continued to evolve in assistance to schools in the form of the integration revenue program, and then all guided by the integration rule itself. In 2011, this legislature really moved in the opposite direction, Mr. Chair. It attempted to repeal the rule, which was not done in the end, but did move to sunset the integration revenue program, which is currently sunset in 2014, and then asked the task force to come in the meantime and bring it recommendations on how to repurpose the integration revenue funds. We're going to hear shortly from two of the task force members, and they won't do a long explanation, but just, you know, give you a sense of what they're hoping to accomplish, because this bill reflects the work of that task force. It does keep the revenue program. It creates the achievement and integration for Minnesota program. It directs that the revenue be used for racial economic integration that promotes academic achievement. And that's a very important thing for us to stay centered on, that this is a slightly different approach in terms of the use of these state resources. What we're basically saying is that we still highly value the importance of promoting racial integration in our schools, i.e., preventing racial segregation in our public schools, but also recognizing that to adopt an attitude that we can simply make appropriations to schools while pursuing good racial integration, but yet not promoting academic achievement, is not consistent with our overall purposes here. And so the bill and the task force's work really struggled mightily to put together these two important outcomes for us as a public, racial integration and academic achievement for students in those integrated learning environments. And we're going to be real tempted to separate those things out. But the power, if you will, the new direction of this bill is really about, really lies where those two pieces are where they intersect. The bill has strong accountability. It provides guidance in terms of how to do that. Some of that is prescriptive, not heavily, although some areas are much more sort of suggestions, if you will. It provides strong accountability measures, including the, we'll talk about this later after the testimony, including the ability of the commissioner to withhold integration revenue funds if districts are not meeting the goals that they laid out in plans that they presented before the public, that they said we're going to be held accountable to, and that will be measured by the use of longitudinal data. And so there are several ways in which we are looking to hold school districts accountable to both those integration and academic achievement goals. I think, Mr. Chair, I'm going to stop there for now because I want the testifiers to come forward and share their thoughts with you, and then we can come back to the bill and have a discussion about, well, whatever the committee wants to discuss. Obviously, we talked a lot about policy issues in the policy committee, but that's certainly fair game here. And, of course, we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the finance portion of that. My hope is that we would do that as well.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Mariani. So call your first witnesses, testifiers. And Ms. Bassett or Mr. Erickson, who's going to go first?
Good morning. I think that I'm going to have the pleasure.
Very good. If you would introduce yourself, please.
Thank you so much, Chair Marquardt. I'm Helen Bassett, and I am a former member of the Integration Revenue Replacement Task Force, and currently a school board director in Robbinsdale School District, and also currently serving at the West Metro Education Program, which is a collaborative where I'm serving as the chairperson there. And, of course, West Metro Education Program, WEMEP, is one of the integration districts, the three metro districts. So when we think about AIM, and that is Achievement and Integration for Minnesota, I think that what I really want to focus on, of course, is how AIM would impact, having that impacts us in Robbinsdale, and I'll spend a little time talking about WEMEP as well. This will be brief this morning. And so in Robbinsdale, what we know is that the funds that we get from our integration revenue, it leverages the general education resources that we have, including those losses that we have through cross-subsidy from special education, which was referenced a little bit earlier today. It will provide specialized instruction for math, reading, and science in racially identifiable buildings within our district, and we have several. And so we're able to actually be even more targeted with the dollars that we have. It will leverage the investments to early education that we already are doing and that we hope to expand. It will leverage the targeted instruction to our most needy students. It supports increased family involvement across all grade levels, and of course that never ceases to be important. It supports teachers' skill acquisition and adapting instruction to accommodate and transcend the diverse cultural differences in our buildings and among our students. It will enhance that home-to-school support that's so very much needed. There are very few places where we can really do the kind of bridging that supports our teaching staff, and our cultural liaisons really help us do that, and that's just so important. Achievement and Integration for Minnesota also will help us. I touched on the licensed staff and the need for our teachers to have additional training. We in Robbinsdale have a two-year plan for all of our licensed staff to participate in equity training, focus on training for non-licensed staff to create a better alignment that leads to achievement for all of our students. In Robbinsdale, I talked a little bit about our cultural liaisons, and I'll just say again that they help ensure that integration and equity are in practice district-wide and supporting the building teams, because they certainly do need that. It acts as a public partners with the district, and in other words, we have additional faces in the community where parents and community members can feel comfortable knowing, kind of understanding some of the challenges that we're facing. As a matter of fact, our district was just involved, just invited, 281 was just involved to invited rather, to participate in one of our local parishes. The parish itself came forward and wanted to have a discussion about equity. We were excited. And in that, our cultural liaison director, Marcellus Davis, was able to meet with them and come together with Isaiah, and actually they're putting on a forum about equity that the congregation wants to have with its parishioners. And that's just exactly the kind of conversation that we want the community to come forward and want to have. And to be invited to that as the school district is no small thing. We will work with our liaisons, work with other liaisons to help with the outreach for specific events. What comes to mind is the help they gave us as we opened our science and engineering, arts and technology elementary magnet. And our liaisons helped us with our recruitment efforts, and we have just a rich array of families that are now participating in that program. It helps, they help plan events, and I won't say a whole lot more about that. I think you understand. I want to turn to WEMEP and talk a little bit more about that. I think perhaps I didn't talk as much about it last time, but WEMEP and the other EMED and Northwest Suburban Districts do a great service by, you know, sharing resources. And I know that's something that this body and, of course, everybody's concerned with these days, and that is making the best use of the dollars you have. So when you can collaborate, that's always a good thing. WEMEP specifically serves over 100,000 students and staff through regional leadership, collaboration, and commitment, and mutual support. Excuse me. We provide regional leadership for equity and achievement, integrated learning environments, and I've said that we serve so many. I want to name those districts that are served by WEMEP. That's Brooklyn Center, Columbia Heights, St. Louis Park, Eden Prairie, Edina, Minneapolis, Hopkins, Representative Seltzer, St. Anthony, New Brighton, Richfield, Robbinsdale, and Wayzata. Models shared services and professional development, models that are well-respected and firmly utilized, groundbreaking student learning programming opportunities. We have the Dare to Be Real program where real leadership has come from students in Edina. They're doing a great job up there and leading the way for how students talk. And the students themselves came forward and wanted to talk about these issues because, of course, as they're in school and they see things happening, they have opinions. And so as a result of that, our staff was able to work with them to further their aims. Elders Wisdom Children's Song, which is also a highly regarded program. I just want to just touch on very briefly and just remind you again, and I know that many of you already know, that Minneapolis, Minnesota has changed, and the free and reduced percentages and in our school districts, and for the most of them, most part, we're all first suburban ring districts. And even some of our neighbors further to the west, Eden Prairie and Wayzata, are experiencing some of this change as well. As you'll see, Columbia Heights with the highest percentage of free and reduced is 74%. That is no small thing. And as you look across that, you know, what is interesting about the WEMEP Collaborative is that when you balance all of that out, at the center is the demographic makeup of WEMEP. It is right at center. And so what that says to me is that we have a good blend of districts that have disparate issues, but we're able to come together and try to understand all of those issues, not the least of which is Minneapolis, the central city, and some of the challenges they've been facing. And so I'll end these comments by just sharing with you some words I've adapted from a poem by Frederick Douglass, and all of you are so learned, I'm sure that you may have heard some of this before. There are those who want crops and are willing to plow, those who are willing to place their hand to the plowshare as they bear witness to the shifting needs and priorities of our children and our times. Our students, in all of their diverse glory, are the crop. Leaders of this body have so often led the way in setting expectations for excellence in education. I believe that you understand how vital your support is to our cause, and we seek the assistance of this body in your continued partnership and support of AIM. We are clear in the knowledge that together we can provide the rain that is needed for Minnesota students that will enable them to reap the harvest that they deserve. And so we thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Bassett. And we'll listen to Mr. Erickson make his presentation, then we'll open it up for questions. So, Mr. Erickson, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, members of the House Education Finance Committee. It's nice to be back before you. We greatly appreciated the opportunity to participate in the joint Senate-House session regarding this matter. And in the interest of time and to avoid duplication, I'm going to avoid having to replay the PowerPoint and just cover some new points that weren't raised as a part of that PowerPoint presentation. Again, I want to thank you, and I want to reiterate that the 12-member task force appointed by the governor and Republican leadership, and we started our work in October of 2011 and completed our work the day before the deadline, February 13th of 2012, and we're back before the legislature this year with our recommendations. Our recommendations and the House File 247 mirror the legislative audits auditor's work back in 2005, mirror in the context that the accountability and the issues that were raised were addressed through 41 presentations received by the task force and subsequently the recommendations that you have before you. And now the legislation by Representative Mariani, who was a member of the task force, that mirror images the recommendations of the task force. We'll move on very quickly and just point that we believe it's critically important to create the achievement and integration for Minnesota, the AIM program as it's being referred to, funded through existing categorical revenue to address the concerns with the current program while focusing uses of the revenue in a manner that can be easily tied to student achievement. I think that's critically important. We also want to ensure accountability and oversight by the Department of MDE, which currently has one full-time employee assigned to 131 integration equity revenue budgets. One employee assigned to 131 integration equity budgets. Our focus is about innovative and integrative learning environments, family engagement, professional development, access to opportunity. They're a critical piece of our recommendation and of the legislation that's before you. I want to get into some new statistics, Chair, that haven't been presented previously. Dr. Melcher provided me this information earlier this week upon request, my request. I thought it'd be interesting for you to know how many students are, of color are served by the integration revenue provided by the state of Minnesota to 131 districts. The number is 172,865 students of color that are currently served by the funding received by the state from the state of Minnesota, which is approximately $68 million. Then, of course, I want to remind all of us that the districts individually currently have the authority to levy an additional 30% local levy, which increases the total expenditure for integration programs to approximately $100 million. I want to be quick to point out that the local levy authority sunsets sunsets with the 13-14 school year, after which it disappears. It disappears a year earlier for Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm not sure you're aware of that, but if you are, good. If you're not, I've just informed you that the Minneapolis and St. Paul districts lose their 30% levy authority a year earlier than all of the other districts in the state who have that authority. I want to point out, as I have previously, I'm very passionate about closing the achievement gap in a real sense, but in measurable results in the AVID program, Advancement Via Individual Determination, that's in place in 31 districts, has proven that to be very successful. I requested the information from all the districts and learned that there are 5,705 secondary students that are currently enrolled in the very successful AVID program. I just want to reiterate that the loss of the local levy is currently funded by stakeholders who have had public hearings, at least in our district, and I think in most districts have an annual budget hearing, and that's referenced in the new legislation, but just want to indicate we currently have held hearings with regard to funding our local share of the funding for this. You probably also know I am a member of a school board. I'm in my second term in Lakeville, where we have 17% students of color. That's double what we had just 5 years ago. I also want to indicate that I serve on the legislative committee of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, representing 38 school districts that have half the student population enrolled in the enrollment for those 38 districts represents half the student population in the state of Minnesota. Pleased to participate on that legislative committee, and I'm appreciative and grateful to be before you again today. In closing, I would glad to answer any questions regarding finances. I want to reiterate that one of the key focuses of the legislative audit report and subsequently the task force and now the legislation before you is that 80% of the $68 million would have to be spent in the classroom and would be measured and to ensure that that is in fact happening. In the absence of that happening and the measure of success that goes with it, those measurements, success measurements, achievement measurements, closing the gap measurements, in the absence of that happening, a given district could or would submit themselves to losing the eligibility for continued funding. So 80%, 20% for staff development, and one of the things that I champion personally from the very beginning of the task force and until the conclusion and the recommendations was we limit the administrative expense to 10%, which involves high-paid positions, travel, etc. And I just want to emphasize that because that is something that became a focus and is included in Representative Mariani's legislation. I'll stop there, be willing to answer any questions. I'm grateful for this opportunity to be before you and what's been truly a bipartisan effort on the part of the task force. I believe, Helen, you were appointed by the governor?
Ms. Bassett?
Yes, commissioner. Yes. Okay. And I was appointed by former Speaker of the House, Kurt Sellers.
Thank you very much. Before we take questions, members, I'd like to refer you to this run, these handouts. And Mr. Strom, would you quickly go over this, just so everyone... Because, you know, I'd like to focus as much of the attention on the finances, because for some members, this is the third time we've heard this, so we've had a chance to ask some of the policy questions. So if possible, as much as possible, refer questions to the finances. So, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, members, there's a printout in your packet that shows estimated integration revenue for 2014 under the proposal for House File 247. And then the last two columns show the change from base. Let me just very briefly go through how that printout is laid out. The first column is the pupil count we currently use to calculate integration revenue. That's what we call adjusted weighted average daily membership. The next column is from the 2011-12 school year count of the students, the percent students of color in the district. Under the formula considered by Representative Mariani in House File 247, there's three parts to that formula. The first part is $350 per pupil times the percentage of students of color in that district. And so you can see statewide there's $66.8 million in that category, and you can look up and down the page there to see the amounts for individual districts. Then there's a guarantee that provides a percentage of the previous formula. That amounts to $21 million, and again, you can look up and down and see the percent that the guarantee provides for each district. And then there's an incentive revenue component, which is $10 per pupil unit, and you can see that that totals about $5.9 million for the participating districts. So when you add all those columns up in the fourth to last column, the total revenue turns out the same as the current law total revenue for fiscal year 14 at $93.89 million. And you can, again, look up and down the list to see how those are distributed. That amount is then shown per pupil, and the last two columns then show the change from the base. So, for example, if one were to go back to the baseline amount of revenue, and because of limited space on the printout, we didn't show that, you can see that the $15.4 million for Minneapolis plus the reduction of $3 million would give you the base for that district, or the change from base would be $78 per pupil.
Thank you so much. And Mr. Strom, this is a combination of levy and aid, these revenue amounts?
Mr. Chair, yes. Under House File 247, the bill provides for the revenue to be computed in the way that's shown on the printout. 70% of the total revenue would be provided in state aid, and 30% of the revenue for each district would be provided through a local levy.
And Mr. Strom, is that levy equalized?
Mr. Chair, this is not really an equalized aid and levy. It doesn't have any characteristics of tax base that come into play. It's simply 70% aid, 30% levy.
Very good. All right, members, questions? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Hey, thank you for the testimony. And, you know, from the audit report we had, obviously there were some strong concerns, and evidently from the testimony, it seems like some of those are being addressed, especially like the comments about the 10% for administration and the, you know, limiting the amount spent on travel and those things versus in the classroom. So thank you for that. One of the things I noticed about the bill is that it seems to indicate that addressing the achievement gap, and then it says and racial and economic integration, as if those are two separate goals. Do you give me an example of how the bill intends to address racial and economic integration, and then I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
Either Representative Mariani or one of the testifiers.
Okay. Who wants the Representative Mariani?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Grunwald. The bill calls for all districts to submit their plans, to have goals that are embedded in those plans to accomplish both of those objectives. We're not overly prescribing to districts exactly how to do that. We want to provide some room there. We are providing some guidance in terms of things like making sure that they address in-school educational practices, that they address policy, curricula, trained staff, all towards promoting academic achievement and cultural fluency and increasing graduation and parent involvement, increasing parent involvement. So we're providing, we're trying to strike a real balance here with the bill in terms of providing some strong direction, but leaving districts to have some room within that as they develop their plans according to the realities in their districts. It's the bill right up front says that the revenue itself must be used for racial and economic integration that promotes academic achievement. So the attempt here is to address both of those issues. Certainly open to ways in which we can strengthen the direction, but my attempt is to have our legislature speak very strongly about the equal value that we place to both of those. And actually, what we're hearing from the field is that you really can't separate both of those things, that within the work of racial integration, it's only meaningful if you have academic achievement going forward. And in order to drive academic achievement with these districts that are actually moving the needle or showing us, is that it's precisely by engaging in racial and creating racially integrated learning environments that produces the kind of space, dynamics, relationships, application of interventions, and some districts are doing these in different ways that are helping to drive academic achievement.
Any other questions for the testifiers? Because we have two more testifiers, and then at the end of the testifiers, if members have questions overall for the author, then we can come back. So just while we have the testifiers up,
yep.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, and I just, to me, I'd suggest this. You know, I appreciate your comments, but I see addressing the academic gap, that it will result in racial and economic integration. In other words, it's not and, it's will result. And I just want to give you one quick example. I had the opportunity to see a documentary and movie, Gifted Hands, by Dr. Ben Carson, who was the son of a single-parent mom on welfare. He was considered stupid in the sixth grade. He was a black child, but his mom believed in him, and he wound up, okay, as the head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins University. So when you address the academic achievement result, okay, and I think the movie should be mandated viewing for everybody involved in education and everybody in legislature. So when you address the academic achievement problem, it will result in racial and economic integration. Those aren't two separate things. And the way the bill reads, Section 2, verse
verse. I'm getting mixed up with church and politics. Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah.
Thank you, Pastor Grunhagen.
Yeah. Well, now we'll have an offering. No, no, when you look at lines 214 to 217, it creates them as two separate things. And I would like to see that changed as a suggestion that when you address the achievement gap, it will result in racial and economic integration. And not having separate programs and wasting time trying to get people to believe something that needs to be addressed with academics.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, my questions are not for the testifiers.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Radenovich.
My questions are as well, not for the testifiers.
Very good. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I basically, in the testimony about Lakeville, I noticed that the testifier mentioned the doubling of the percent of students of color. Was that just a natural outcome, or is that, you know, demographics? Now, I was just curious because, you know, the task force said that integration was, you know, the number one thing when we had earlier testimony. It wasn't achievement, et cetera. It was integration, and this is the first district I've heard that appears to have had an improvement in integration, and I was just curious what it was about.
Mr. Erickson?
Chair, member, I would indicate it's a change of demographics. Employment, we have the third largest industrial park in the state of Minnesota, large concentration of Hispanic.
Chair Markwood?
Yes, Ms. Bassett.
I actually wanted to make a comment to, is it Representative Grunewald? Am I saying that
Grunhagen.
Correctly? Grunhagen? Grunhagen? Sorry, I can't quite see your name tag. You know, what I wanted to say is that I really appreciate your comments about the future aspects or prospects of students, you know, under what we're trying to achieve here. But, you know, there's a real-time effect and benefit right now for those students. You know, I know you've heard testimony about housing patterns and the fact that we have just pockets of severe poverty, as well as pockets where people are doing quite well economically. The opportunities that students have to engage with other students who have a different circumstance than they have has meaning, has power, and is important. And so I don't, you know, so the real-time effect, you're making our case for us. Not only does it help you right now, it helps you in the future. And so I don't want to miss that because I think it's vitally important. Schools are being asked, particularly first suburban school districts, are being asked to deal with all the complexity that comes when you have such a diverse community. And people don't, some have resources, some don't. I mean, even the sportscasters are talking about how that plays out in terms of competition. So it's a real issue. And what we can do with these dollars helps us address it in real time.
Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, my question is for Representative Mariani.
Very good. Representative Morgan.
Same.
Representative Selzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also just want to mention that I proudly represent Eden Prairie, who's part of WEMEP also. I had a question, and first of all, I just want to say that this plan, this bill really is a result of a lot of thoughtful work, and I appreciate the direction of it, and I'm very excited to see the fruition of your efforts. I did have a question, and I am asking it with Ms. Bassett still here because I know that you are a board member of WEMEP. I think you're the chair. It makes sense. My question is around the possible forming a single 7-county metropolitan area-wide partnership. And it is an economic question. I know that WEMEP and EMID and they're all doing vital work. And so I am just wondering, you know, if we would be adding another layer, or, you know, if there's any vision for how that would work. Would that usurp some of WEMEP's work? And there is an economic portion to that because that's more of an administrative layer. So I was just wondering if you could comment on that.
Ms. Bassett.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members. You know, when we talk about that, we recognize the economies of scale and some of those kind of principles. And, of course, because it's part of the financial picture, we really wanted to pay attention to that as well. What we realize, though, is that when you talk about the broad geographic area that we're talking about, when we stretch from northwest to EMED and then over to the west, it's quite a large catchment area. And, of course, you know, theoretically, no one would want to have children traveling every day across large distances. But what we recognize is that there may be some utility in thinking about that. In fact, we've had just some very informal, quick conversations among ourselves, the districts, and not deeply, but we thought it was important enough a notion to bring forward to a body to look at more closely to see, is there some way that we could provide some additional utility and benefit to students as well as, you know, impact the economy in these hard times by looking at that? And perhaps it might make more sense for EMED and WEMEP to talk together because we kind of round that geographically. Maybe there's some more synergy. But I can't pretend to say I know. We have not studied it deeply enough for me to say that I think it's the best thing to do, the right thing to do. But I do think, and I think we all agree, that it had enough merit that perhaps it should be looked at in the future, and maybe this body would yeah. think that as well and would actually direct then how that might happen. So that's my take on it. Other members are here and can speak to that.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Representative Mariani.
And the task force was not at a point to make a decision definitively, you know, to the legislature on this. However, for the reasons articulated by Ms. Bassett, you know, the ongoing discoveries of both economic efficiencies but also the ability to enhance the learning environments by pushing the frontiers of collaboration, the next best thing then was to make sure that we were fully exploring those possibilities and not just lock ourselves into the, you know, the current, you know, three integration districts and the work that's happening within districts, but to constantly be looking at ways in which we can deliver mm-hmm. education both more effectively and more efficiently. So the language basically says that the commissioner will evaluate the efficacy of district plans and to encourage the exploration of new types of collaborations, including things like a metro-wide collaborative.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hertas.
Mr. Chair, my question can wait till after the other testifiers is about the technical language of the
Representative bill. Daphne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, we've tended to have this debate both in Chair Mariani's committee and here with an emphasis on what is the value of this for children of color. And the way the formula is structured is it emphasizes what is your percentage of children of color in your district. And that's fair and reasonable, all. But I also observe, I've got a number of families in my district, represent part of Minneapolis, who have open enrolled either out of suburban settings or out of overwhelmingly white charter schools, these are white families, into Minneapolis high schools, because they find that for their children, they are more challenged academically by being in more racially and ethnically diverse settings. That the quality of academic discussion is richer, the development of critical thinking is sharper, because you've got racial, economic, religious, and other forms of diversity present in a classroom that you don't necessarily find present in overwhelmingly white mm-hmm. settings. Can you speak to the, you know, both the impact on the majority population of attending more racially diverse schools and, you know, do rising tides actually lift all ships?
Ms. Bassett?
Well, thank you, Chair. I'm so glad you asked that question. You know, I'll tell you that one of my grave concerns is that we don't often have an opportunity to talk about our white students a lot. And of course, because we have students in poverty, and most times they're students of color, and so trying to really get at some of the things that can really help them, and it's true, a rising tide does lift all ships. That is true. And what we know is that if we do what is right that we should be doing, that we know how to do, and we adapt our instruction for those students who are the most neediest, who need the most kind of intervention. Those skills that those teachers acquire allow them to be better teachers across the board with all their students. Now, having said that, I think that having our students, our white students, not have the skills they need to navigate a diverse world, and the critical thinking that you're talking about is absolutely correct. I would hate to have a manager who missed an opportunity to make a discovery or create some kind of a product or bring something to market that could benefit everybody because that manager couldn't get the best out of their employee because they didn't know how to bridge the gap. And that's not only in the business community as they move forward and join the ranks. It's as they work through their educational experience. Those are when you acquire those skills. You don't wait till you get to the workplace and then try to figure out how to get along with Helen. You know, and I'm quite charming, but you know, but you know,
so far, I find it very pleasant.
Forgive me, Chair. I'm sorry, but I'm very serious about this. You know, you don't wait till then to have a person who has some responsibility and authority who can't get along with the person sitting next to them, when they could very well be making discoveries and actually bringing products to market and doing other kinds of things that are there that we need. We are in this country, which is just, it's not homogenous. We are not China. We are not Japan. We are not some of these other countries that have such a homogenous population. We have all this diversity. And if we can't figure out how to deal with some of this diversity together, I'm afraid to see what the economic forecast is going to be down the road. It's just...
Thank you. Yeah, very quickly, yeah,
very
Mr. Erickson.
Anecdotal comment. AVID program, you've heard me speak to it. It's certainly exists in Minneapolis-St. Paul schools. It exists in ours district. We have over 300 students enrolled in AVID. AVID, one of the key elements of AVID as part of the rigor is Cornell Notes. If any of you have heard of the use of Cornell Notes, the entire student body in Lakeville now uses Cornell Notes as a result of the students of color introducing it to them, the 84% white population.
Thank you.
Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Mariani, do you have other testifiers? Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. If you introduce yourself, and
yes,
please proceed.
Chairman Marquardt, it's my pleasure to be here today. My name is Peggy Flathman. I'm the superintendent of the Fridley Public Schools and also a member of Northwest Suburban Integration School District. And with me today is my colleague.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Bielke. I'm the executive director of Northwest Suburban Integration School District. Thank you for inviting us today to share a little bit about how we currently use integration funding and how that impacts the 95,000 students that are enrolled in the 8 school districts that make up Northwest Suburban. You should be getting 2 handouts. One is of the PowerPoint that I'm working through, and then one additional piece of information for yourselves. First, I'd just like to let you know we are currently accountable to the state of Minnesota. Each year, all 8 school districts and Northwest Suburban provides an updated budget and integration plan to MDE. And like this group in the room, our main goal is to work on student achievement for all students, create integrative learning environments, but also provide access to opportunities to all of our 95,000 students. One of the main ways in which we work at creating an inclusive learning environment and provide high rigor for all students are our magnet schools. We have 22 locally controlled magnet schools. They are run by their home school districts. They go across 3 different themes: International Baccalaureate, the Arts, and STEM. And enrolled in these 22 magnet schools are just over 12,500 students, and 48% of those are students of color. We have just over 4,000 students that are enrolled through Northwest Suburban through school choice options. So they're leaving their neighborhood schools and attending a school in a different part of their home school district or in a different school district altogether. Our magnet schools are our largest beneficiary of the integration funding. At Northwest Suburban, we coordinate the applications and transportation for the students to those schools. We also work with quality control and collaboration coordination across the magnet schools and their personnel. At the local district, the money is used for specialized materials, resources, leaderships, and training that's unique to the magnet school experience. We also just want to reiterate that if there's a non-renewal of the integration levy, that we will anticipate a 30% decrease of funding, which will then impact our magnet programming. Student achievement is very important, like I said, and we do monitor our student achievement. And at Northwest Suburban, we create, and I have a book here to leave behind for more information, but we create a document for each of our 22 schools that tracks their MCE data for reading, math, and science over the course of 5 years, and it's broke down by ethnicity and gender. We look for overall trends. We want to see growth trends, and we want to see closing of achievement gap. We use these data to identify best practices that we can share across our schools, our districts, and the collaborative. And we at Northwest, in addition to our superintendents, our principals, and our magnet school leaders, use these data to set goals for improvement and program enhancements. I have with you just three, and they're a little bit larger farther back in your packets to refer to you for you. But I have three schools just to share a little bit of what they look like. And we'll start with Anoka Middle School. It's an arts middle school for grades 6 through 8. And the first chart just shows their ethnicity. So the first grouping is Anoka Middle School for 5 years, their trends of ethnicity, and then all of Anoka Hennepin School District, all of Northwest Suburban, the 8 District Collaborative, and then the state of Minnesota. From there, we break it down into the subgroups of the testing. So the next one is science. And at the 8th grade level is the only grade in the middle school that's tested for science. And there's lots of data in this chart, but I'm just going to break it down a little bit for you. You can see that the lines are colored, and they represent the different ethnic breakdowns, or racial breakdowns, excuse me. And then across the bottom, you'll see 7 different clusters. The first cluster are the ELL students. The second are the special education students. The third are the free and reduced lunch price students. Then all of Anoka Middle School, which is the 4th grouping. Then all of Anoka Hennepin, all of our Northwest Suburban groups, and then the state of Minnesota. So if we look at just this is science, in the middle section, which is the 4th set of data, that shows how Anoka Middle School 8th graders are doing over a trend of 5 years. And you can see that there's overall growth. And you can see that there's progress being made to closing the achievement gap. And you can also see that each subgroup is scoring higher than the state average.
And the next charts are from Fridley Middle School.
Ms. Blathman, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Are from the Fridley Middle School, and this is an IB middle school. It's one of our magnet schools, one of the 22. And just so that you're very clear about this, each one of these 22 magnet schools are monitored with all of this information. And as Dorothy said earlier, it's all in a chart here that's much easier to read when it's in color. In Fridley Middle School, this chart is indicating essentially our ethnicity, which is grown in the last 5 years, that's listed here, from about under 40%, 39%, to over 42%. And also, like Lakeville, has grown significantly in the last 10 years. The next chart is our reading for Fridley Middle School. This is grades 5, 6, 7, and 8. And again, if I can just direct you to the 4th set of lines that are on the paper, you can see that they're trending upward, as is the last set, which is also the state of Minnesota. But what we are most often looking at is where the achievement gap is. And so those are closing in our ethnicity populations in Fridley Middle School. You know, these charts are reviewed annually by all of the superintendents at meetings, as well as the board of directors for Northwest Suburban.
And I'd like to continue next.
Yeah.
With Monroe Elementary, which is a STEM elementary school for grades K to 5, and their ethnicity is 55% students of color. This is their math, and you need to remember that at only grades 3, 4, and 5 are tested at the elementary level. And for math, if we look again at the fourth set, you can see significant progress has been made in closing the achievement gap, and all of their groups have scored higher than the state average. The Northwest is more than just our magnet schools. We're a collaborative, and our school districts really appreciate what programming we can bring to their school districts. The superintendents meet monthly. Our magnet school personnel comes together close to monthly, and we also have a joint powers board that meets about 8 times a year. Some of the things that we bring to the school districts is our accountability. We have a magnet school reflection and review visit that happens on a 2-year cycle to provide feedback on their magnet programming, so we can look for ways to improve that and improve rigor for all students. Our IB schools are also accountable to the IB World Organization, and as I shared with you already, we have the MCA data that we tracked for them. We work for program support for students in such areas as AVID and our annual student leadership conference, with over 500 students coming from all 8 school districts to participate in that one-day event. We have professional development offerings to our magnet program schools about magnet programming and connecting different programs across, like all the STEM people come together, and learn how to share their ideas and increase their depth of implementation. We have multicultural professional development with our resources and how to work with families that come from a variety of backgrounds. And another large component of our work is family and community empowerment with such things as mentorship programming and parent leadership training. It's really hard to give you a picture of all that we do in a little 6 minutes, but I hope you did understand a little bit more about how integrationist funding is used in our 8 school districts. And we just really want to thank you for coming here and let you know we really support House File 247 and hope that the funding for integration will continue in the future. We're very happy to answer any questions that
thank
you have.
Thank you so much. Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for Superintendent Flathman. Thank you for being here. I'm very proud to live in the community of Fridley and just very pleased with the aggressiveness Fridley has taken in trying to raise the achievement level of all students. So I want to thank you for that. I think one thing that's not being captured here is the effect that this has beyond the magnet schools within the school districts. So, for example, and I'd like you to comment on this, Fridley has the magnet school middle school, but what that has done to the entire school district and how the community has come behind that and has passed levies to help support the expansion to be a world school, and we're a property-poor school district, and yet the community has seen value in that. Could you just explain how this has impacted the entire school from K through 12?
Superintendent Flathman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bernardi and the rest of the committee. Exactly. Even earlier in the testimony when we talked about students of color and white students, all of our kids in this school district have benefited greatly. Originally, we had one magnet school, which was our middle school. Then our second school became our high school. And both of our elementary schools are also magnet schools that our own district has continued to support beyond the integration levy and is not officially part of the Northwest Suburban Magnet Program. However, our school district is not unlike the rest of the school districts that are there. Only a portion of their schools are magnet schools, yet the entire district districts benefit from the work that is done by the Northwest Suburban.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure which of the testifiers. I'm curious what the Northwest Suburban Integration School District's total budget, annual budget is, and then how many licensed staff total, and then how many licensed staff of that licensed staff are not classroom.
Ms. Bilski?
I don't have the total, but Northwest Suburban's budget is just about $1.3 million, which represents about 10% of the total integration funding that comes into all 8 school districts. Northwest Suburban has 9 full-time employees. None of them are classroom teachers because our magnet schools are all run by their individual school district.
Okay.
Very good. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before, I know we have amendments yet to do, but so I'm going to ask if there's anyone right now in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 247. And it looks to be about three. I'm going to ask you to keep your comments to about 1 minute if you can, just. And also, if you can refer to the finances on this bill. So please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, Jim Graff, Ball, Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm joined by Shanna Alagbadu with Minneapolis Public Schools. She's got prepared comments, but in the interest of time, maybe what we could do is simply go on record in support of the bill. We would like, we can submit those written comments to you at the end of the day. And just thank you for your discussion and debate of this. We appreciate the work of the task force. Shauna, do you want to make a quick comment?
Please proceed. Thank
sure.
you.
Yep. None other than
please identify yourself.
Sure. My name is Shauna Moses Olagbaju. I'm the coordinator for educational equity and integration for Minneapolis Public Schools. Just to simply go on record on saying that surely we are in support of the bill that is before us too, for a number of succinct reasons. One, I just wanted to address and echo a comment that was made earlier regarding some of the benefits of integration, not only for students of color, but for white students, and just emphasize that point about how research shows that learning in diverse settings encourages complex and critical thinking. For example, one study found that students in a racially and ethnically diverse classrooms show the greatest engagement in active thinking processes, growth in intellectual engagement, and motivation and growth. So I just want to offer that as sometimes we see this as something that's simply beneficial for students of color, and in fact it is, but there are mutual benefits to this piece too. Secondly, I just want to emphasize the fact that retaining the integration rule, you know, without any clearly enunciated mandate and absent any sort of financial mechanism, invites increased scrutiny, and surely we don't want to continue down that path. So the adoption of this bill, having it be something that's clear policy and a nice finance mechanism, is something that we certainly support from the Minneapolis end.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we'll submit her full comments to the committee later today.
Very
electronically.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other testifiers for or against? Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you'd please state your name.
Good morning. Thank you for welcoming me. My name is Michelle Walker and I'm Chief of Staff of the St. Paul Public Schools. I too had a longer statement and will submit that for the record. But in the interest of time, I do also want to support the bill that's moving forward and just make a few points. St. Paul has been before this committee and previous versions of this committee many times to talk about the great progress that's going on in our school system, and we recently adopted a strategic plan, the Strong Schools, Strong Communities plan, of which integration and equity is a real bedrock of that plan. And we've seen success with our current integration programming, and we'd like to see that continued. We also want to make the point that we certainly want to be engaged in a dialogue about how to ensure the best for our students and all of the students across the state by continuing funding of aid and levy for integration programs. And we also support a grandfather provision that allows districts to maintain their current programming. So I believe that the bill has quite a lot of elements that can help us to continue the good work that many of the districts testified to, and we want to ensure that that funding both continues, but that there's also a mechanism to grandfather some of the great work that's already occurred. So we could certainly talk more, but we do have a statement that we could submit for the record. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. Very good. Anyone else from the audience? If not, we're going to go back to the list. Representative Erickson, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is for Mr. Strom. Mr. Strom, can you give us, not exactly, but in the ballpark figure that we've spent on integration aid since the program began? I'm sure it's over $1 billion, but you could provide that with
us. Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, in your guidebook there is a list of the integration revenue since the program's creation, and that's on that's a chart on the on the page 78 there, and we could add those numbers up for you, but that chart shows the integration revenue by year by since its inception in 1987.
Representative Erickson.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. If I'd had my guidebook here, I wouldn't have had to ask the question, but I have my guidebook in my office and didn't think about bringing it today. Then I have a question for the department, if I may ask a question of them.
You certainly may. I saw Mr.
Yes, Ms. Hermanson would be a good one.
Oh, there she are. Ms. Hermanson, welcome to the committee. Go ahead, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and Assistant Commissioner Hermanson. How many schools within our integration program are priority, focus, or rewards? Can you give us those numbers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I do not have that with me, but we would be happy to find that out and get you that information. I do not know that off the top of my head.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
So, Ms. Hermanson, do you have any idea to what extent, perhaps, the schools that are under the priority focus rewards might be, a ballpark percentage? No? Okay, we'll await that information.
And Mr.
Ms.
Chair,
Hermanson.
Representative Erickson, you would want the schools within
yes.
districts.
Yes,
okay.
I would want
just
schools.
To clarify what
Thank
kind of information
you, yes,
you want.
Schools.
We'll try to find that information and get it to the committee.
One last question,
yes,
Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is your longitudinal data system up and running so that we're going to be able to collect this data?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, there are portions of it that are very robust. We still are working on making it fairly complete. Deputy Commissioner Montano would be a better person to address that issue. I can also give you more information as to the depth of that being in place as well.
Finally, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because, you know, we have added that item in Subdivision 1 of Section 1, and for this to be effective, and I think there are lots of great improvements that are being made because of the task force work and because of the promise I think we're giving all students, but we're going to need that longitudinal data, and we've got to have a system that's up and running, and I think you're going to need more staff, in fact, to do all of this, because we are asking plan review, we're asking scrutiny of results, and then we must have this data on the report card. Are you anticipating adding more staff to that division?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, at this point we have no authority or resources to do that. I do see in the bill that they are asking for some additional help. Right now, Dr. Parks is our sole person in the agency that deals with this. And we need to get the longitudinal data system up and running in a very robust way for a variety of reasons in the department. Significant among them is also teacher and principal. There's a lot of reasons why we need to be moving forward on that. But, again, the department has only so many staff, and we welcome any additional help in making sure we can address the needs as you send them to us.
We're going to take one more question. We're going to go to amendments. Representative Radenovich.
I'm good on my question. I think it's been answered.
Okay. Representative Myra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani, I was wondering if you would highlight any differences between your proposal here and the governor's education bill.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Myra. well, one major difference on the finance end is that we do speak on the issue of the levy. And so we want to be able to continue that. The governor does not have that in his proposal. In terms of the policy language, while the language is different, it actually pulls pretty much in the same direction. My bill is much more lengthy in terms of providing guidance to school districts about options within which they can promote the main charge here of both academic achievement tied to racial and economic integration. But we're not seeing, you know, violent differences in terms of the direction to districts in this regard. Obviously, we'll, you know, over the course of the next few weeks, we'll be working out differences between the language before this committee and the governor's bill and what we have in our bill. But really, the major difference would be really on the finance side, where we're looking to continue to levy.
All right. Thank you very much. We're going to go to amendments, and I have an A14 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll take that in,
very good.
In the absence of Representative Woodard. I'd like to move the A14 for adoption, and I'm ready to explain the amendment.
Yep, please explain your amendment, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This matches the governor's request that we repeal the levy. It would reduce the dependence or the reliance on local property taxes to fund education priorities. And, Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
All right. There's the roll call. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, members, I would respectfully oppose the amendment. We had the same amendment in our policy committee. We also voted it down at that point. I just want to make a couple points. The loss of the levy obviously, you know, produces less resources for school districts that are currently in the program. I would certainly be open to entertaining us fully funding with state aid, you know, that portion. And I'm sure some of my districts will probably like that as well. But, you know, members, frankly, I like the idea of school districts having skin in the game, if you will, on this issue. They're going to have to be, under this bill, they're going to have to submit plans with clearly articulated goals, measurable goals. They're going to have to do that in not only to the commissioner, but in public hearings, guided by longitude of data to be able to measure success in those goals. The way my bill is structured, we can debate whether it's the right way to do it or not, but currently the way my bill is structured, the levy adjusts according to whether or not those school districts are losing aid, which they will if they don't hit those goals. And so think about it, members. That's a direct conversation with your local public folks that you've asked, you know, to be part of the solution here. And you're going to have to go back to them and say, you know, sorry, you know, we asked you to continue your current levies, we just didn't hit our goals, and so your levy's going to have to go up a little bit more. I think that's a pretty harsh, you know, reality check for school districts. And so I think, you know, there's throughout this bill, there's this constant desire to have this tension here about how do we be helpful at the same time, how do we hold school districts accountable against measurable goals, and the levy piece is structured in this bill is part of that accountability measurement. So for that, members, and for the very real loss in resources to the school districts, I would propose this amendment.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm taking this vote on this amendment very seriously. I don't want to hurt minority students in any way. I think my opening statement when I was on the committee was that one of my goals was to address the achievement gap, but I sometimes think less resources causes a school district to focus on what really needs to be done versus doing exercises and programs that distract from academics. And what I mean by that is, I believe it was from Monticello, we had testimony where the superintendent said they went to a six-period day. The six-period day eliminates some elective choices for high school students, but it emphasizes academics. And the result was, and he gave a lot of credit to his staff, their test scores have gone up dramatically. So sometimes having additional resources simply promotes programs that don't emphasize what we need to be doing, which, in my opinion, academics lead to racial and economic integration. And finally, we've always been a country of immigrants. We've always had this problem, okay? But the promotion of multicultural diversity educational philosophy is not helping, in my opinion. You know, our national motto is "E pluribus unum," out of many, one. What multicultural diversity does, educational philosophy, it promotes unum e pluribus, out of one, many. And that's contrary to the founding principles. You teach the principles of the founding of this country, that we, which was God-given rights, that's what we were founded on. Read your preamble in the Constitution. And you teach academics, and that's going to result in racial and economic integration in a very cost-effective way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Enzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I wasn't going to have anything to say about the amendment in particular, but Representative Grünhagen, you've motivated me.
I don't know if that's good or bad, Representative.
you be the judge. To suggest in the field of public education, to suggest in those areas of the public school where it is society's goal and motivation to raise children and to bring about equality and to bring about a chance for a more diverse, educated, prepared workforce, to suggest that less is best, at least on an anecdotal level, I have to challenge that assumption. Lastly, I represent districts that are approximately 10 to 14% children of color. The overwhelming percentage of that cohort are indigenous native populations.
I'll allow Representative Enzel to finish here.
Because of efforts put forth by this committee and this legislature, and especially the work of Representative Mariani, they are benefiting. My population of non-white challenged students living both on and off the reservations are seeing improved test scores, improved employability, improved opportunities for a good life. And it's because of the resources. Challenged as we are to locate resources over the last 10 years, resources are being redirected. And so I just have to challenge your premise that in any case with challenged populations of kids, that less is best.
Members, this bill is being laid over. I mean, this bill is going to be laid over. We are going to have plenty of time, and we talked about the omnibus bill, to talk about amendments to time ends, and I'll make sure we leave days and nights to do that. We have one more bill we're going to hear at 22, and so we're going to get there. And so, Representative Erickson, I'll let you have the final word on this amendment, and then we're going to move to the next amendment and proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Not moving to another committee.
The only comment I was going to make is I found it interesting that the governor did not include the levy. He did that for a reason, and so, you know, for a change, I'm supporting something that the governor supported.
Very good. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Marquardt.
No.
Vice Chair Slocum. Representative Anzels.
No.
Bernardi.
No.
Reiner.
No.
Dabney.
No.
Erickson Sandra.
Yes.
Gruenhagen.
Yes.
Hertas.
Yes.
Mariani.
No.
McDonald.
Yes.
Moran.
No.
Morgan.
No.
Myra.
Yes.
Newton.
No.
Blanc.
Yes.
Radinovich.
No.
Seltzer.
No.
Wells. Woodard.
Yes.
Wells is here. Seven, it doesn't pass.
Get her on the record. I call Representative Wells. If you
Wells?
Sorry,
That's you. Very, yes. Very good.
Just
8 to 10. With 8 yeses and 10 noes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We have a A16 amendment. Who would care to? Representative Erickson?
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw that amendment.
Thank you. We have the A17 amendment.
That's my amendment, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This would take the DSEG rule and place it in statute as recommended by the task force.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I'm actually intrigued by this amendment. I would urge us not to do this at this point. However, I would certainly work with Representative Erickson. I've had some good conversations with folks at the department about this possibility. I think there is some wisdom in doing this. The rule itself is pretty long. There's arguably some pieces in it that are archaic and kind of inconsistent. That's not unusual in our statutes and rules, you know, over time that happens. I would be a little wary of just lifting it up and putting it in right now without looking at it a little bit more carefully and working out, you know, some of the kinks in it. But I think there may be some, over time, there may be some wisdom in doing this. However, I'm hesitant for us to do this at this point. But you, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, you certainly have my interest in the coming weeks to work on this with you and the department and others to see if this might be a wise thing to do at this point in time.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Erickson, any last words?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Mariani, for being willing to work. But I think we can't really work on something until it's put in statute. Then we can start massaging it, amending and modifying it. So, but I'm not going to ask for a roll call, just a voice vote.
Very good. Any other questions? If not, we'll take a vote on the A17 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No. No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. I don't see any further amendments. We have a couple minutes for questions. And I think next on the list is Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it just relates to the amendment that we received untimely. I just wanted to point out in referring to it, I don't see that it ties together with the bill with reference to the page numbers and lines, and being that it wasn't accepted timely, you might want to look into that and see if it fits.
Representative Hertas, thank you so much. That's kind of another reason we didn't deal with it today, too. It didn't quite match up, so thank you. All right, well, Representative Mariani, closing comments.
Just very
here.
Quick. There's lots to say, but obviously very quick. I thought it was pretty significant, members, that the St. Paul School District and the Minneapolis School District, you're not going to see this very often up here, came up here and said, we get it. It's time to change our approach here. And you know what that means? It means in Minneapolis we lose $3 million off of the current appropriation scheme. Now, of course, it's all being sunsetted, so one could argue, well, you're going to lose more than that if we don't do that. St. Paul, $2.3 million. The point is that there's a recognition that we need to shift. It's too long a history to get into. I mean, we've got those school districts and Duluth embedded at a fixed rate. because it reflected the tides. It reflected Minneapolis under lawsuits several over the years, and our efforts to assist that school district and then eventually over time respond to the changing nature in Minnesota. While this may not be the perfect way to do this, I think this is the right direction for us to go. It's a modern version that reflects what's happening out in the field. At the same time, you know, making sure that, that we're doing some level of hold harmless, because you know the change, you know, the revenue expectations for these school districts dramatically and drastically overnight isn't fair to those students and to the programs that they've been maturing and evolving over time. So, members, I'd gladly work with all members here, you know, to see if there might be a better way. To be able to fix these figures, but I just want us to know that the intent here isn't to continue the status quo. It's actually to move us forward and increasingly reflecting the changing nature of the challenges of school districts increasingly across our state. So look forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, and members, as we continue this deliberation.
Representative Marianne, thank you so much, and we will lay over House File 247 for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Representative Wills, would you please chair the meeting?
Do we have a motion to approve the sets of minutes? We have two sets of minutes in front of us. Representative Myra approves the minutes.
Move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Move.
Which amendments is she?
Madam Chair, I have reviewed the minutes for March the 5th and March the 6th, and I move them. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Myra. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carried. And the minutes approved. And we have Representative Marquardt presenting a bill to us today, House File 895.
Thank you very
much.
Please proceed. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And I would like to move House File 895 be laid over for possible inclusion. No, that's exactly right. Madam Chair, this one cannot just do that. Madam Chair, I move this to pass and be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. Members, I was trying to find the goal that this one fit under, and I think it's adequacy, because if we take out a few words out of statute, it'll save some ink and some pages, allow more money to come towards education. But what this does, it does remove some obsolete language on the first tier equalization factor on the operating referendum. It is now 700, and the wording had to, back when it was 500, changed it to 600, now to 7. This removes the obsolete language, and members, that is the bill. And I'd ask for your approval.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Do we have any questions from the members? Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and nice job. And Representative Marquardt, do you have a fiscal note on how much money this will save in ink and paper for our schools?
Madam Chair and Representative Woodard, I did not. I heard it was negligible, so it was, yes.
Thank you.
All those in favor of a re-referral, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion prevails.
Motion prevails.
The motion prevailed, and it'll be referred to taxes.
Thank you.
So thank you for bringing this bill before us.
Thank you.
I get to adjourn. Thank you, members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.